Jacobs, we're ready for Vincent L.
Good afternoon, Your Honor.
Good afternoon.
May I reserve? May it please the Court, my name is Mark Jacobs on behalf of the appellant Robert Long, who is the father of the minor child of Vincent in this matter. Today I will address two of the assigned errors from the appellant's brief. First, that the Court erred when it found that the State proved by a preponderance of the evidence that the allegations in the supplemental petition against Robert Long were true. And second, that during the process of this case, Mr. Long's due process rights were violated when he was denied meaningful hearing for 5 months after his child was removed from his care and custody. This case began with a filing against the mother of this child, Sherry Long, in August of 2009. At the time of that filing, the minor child was in the care of the appellant, Robert Long, and was therefore removed from his care from Health and Human Services. Subsequent to that, Mr. Long was appointed an attorney and filed a motion to intervene and asked for custody to be returned to him. That was set to be heard on November 20th. At that hearing, a last-minute supplemental petition was filed against him by the state. At that time, detention protective custody hearing began, but no evidence was presented at that hearing, nor was there an affidavit attached to the supplemental petition against Mr. Long. That detention protective custody hearing was then continued another 2.5 months to the February 2010 date. The testimony at the adjudication and detention hearing in February stated that Mr. Long had joint custody of his child, Vincent, pursuant to a divorce decree. For the year leading up to the removal in August of 2009, he was the parent with custody of the child 90% of the time. I do concede that Mr. Long does not have the best criminal history, but I argue that that alone does not rise to the occasion for risk of harm. And during the trial, during the adjudication, no nexus, no connection was made between that criminal history and any impact on the child. This case turned, or one of the most important witnesses in this case was the case manager who was called by the state. He testified that for the child, Vincent, to be returned to his child would present a risk of harm to that child. He based his opinion on Mr. Long's felony, misdemeanor, admissions of drug and alcohol use, two violations of a safety plan, and his probation. The felony was a theft from 1999, 6 years before this minor child was even born. The misdemeanor assault occurred in March of 2008, 20 months before the supplemental petition was filed, not in the presence of the minor child.
Can I interrupt you just for a second? With respect to the drug and alcohol use, was there anything that would indicate that has this guy smoked one joint or does he smoke three joints every day for the last 10 years?
No, Your Honor. The testimony in that regard was very vague. There was no details as to amount of use or even time frame of use, just that it was in the father's past. In addition, there was no chemical dependency allegations in the supplemental petition against the father. Regarding the two violations of the safety plan, this was a voluntary plan that the father entered into, and the violations were the fact that he was unsupervised with his child. And finally, the probation, again, the father did concede that he was on probation at that time, and the case manager stated the risk there was the concern that the father would go back to jail and not be able, and the child would be left without its father. I would argue that this is not a definite risk of harm. There's nothing in any of the evidence to say that the father will go back to jail just because he is on probation, unsupervised probation. I would also like to point out that this is the same case manager that, while being on the case for 5 months, testified that while on the case, he never found the father to abuse or neglect the child, and other than being unsupervised with the child, never saw him or had information that the father did not give the child proper parental care. In fact, there was no testimony at all through the adjudication that the father put the child in any abuse, neglect, or lack of proper parental care situation. The mother of the child did testify at the adjudication over objection. She testified as to other domestic violence incidents between the father and herself. She was, again, herself very vague in the time frame and description of these incidents, saying they happened approximately a year before the March 2008 incident. So now that puts us 2.5 years before the filing of the supplemental petition. Also, there was no evidence of any criminal charges from those acts, and she says the minor child may have been present one or two times, but was probably asleep. Throughout the adjudication, there was no evidence of any impact of these allegations on the child, that there was any negative impact on the child. In essence, the court's ruling is that if a parent has a criminal history, that alone will rise to a risk of harm to the child without any other evidence of abuse or neglect. Essentially, if this will be how the county attorney and the trial judges go forward, then the county attorney could presumably set up shop at adult probation and start handing out petitions to every parent coming out of there or to every person that they can do a criminal history search on and file a petition against those parents based solely on the fact that they have criminal record or on probation. As to the due process violations, Your Honor, as I stated in the beginning, from the time Mr. Long had custody pursuant to a divorce decree of his child. From the time his child was removed in August of 2009, all the way 5 months later in February of 2010, not once was he given the opportunity to present evidence, nor was there any evidence presented against him. During that time period, he had, according to the safety plan put into place by Health and Human Services, only supervised contact with the minor child. The state argues in its brief that this is not a restriction on his ability to parent his child or on his liberty interest to raise his child. Your Honor, I would argue that that definitely is a restriction to not be able to take your child out on events alone or to have someone around at all times with your child. In fact, the one violation that the case manager described in December of 2009, the father took his young boy to go see a Husker football game at a Buffalo Wild Wings restaurant. And for that, the case manager stated that he was a risk of harm to the child. Based on the fact that the case manager never testified to neglect or abuse, that there was no definite risk of harm, and that there is no definite risk that the father would actually return to prison, I would ask the court to reverse the adjudication order, remand with directions to dismiss, and return the care and custody of the child to the father. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Slickman? Shuckman.
May it please the court, my name is Amy Shuckman, Deputy County Attorney with Douglas County, at County Attorney's Office, and I would respectfully ask that you affirm the judgment of a separate juvenile court in finding that this child is a child in need under 43-247-3A, and specifically finding that the state proved this case beyond a preponderance of the evidence. It's not just the father's criminal history that concerns the state, it's a totality of the evidence. It's his prior criminal record for assaultive behaviors, it's his current state of probation, and it's the history of domestic violence that he has engaged in with the natural mother, including one case of strangulation, and other cases where the child was present for the incidents. In addition, there has been no accountability from the father for his history of domestic violence. The case manager in this case testified that when speaking with the father about the domestic violence, he responded that it was all blown out of proportion. Because this is an incident where the mother came home to her residence at 4 a.m. The father drove up on the yard with his car, walked out to the mother and started strangling her without a word in front of a variety of witnesses. And for that, his excuse is that was blown out of proportion. There's been no evidence that he's had any therapy or treatment to deal with his domestic violence issues, and his pattern of behavior continues to affect his judgment. There was evidence that immediately prior to the adjudication hearing that the
When you say it's affecting his judgment, how do you mean?
There was an incident where he had taken his child out to Buffalo Wild Wings, and after having dinner, this child stayed, continued to drink alcohol, went to the biological mother's home at 3 a.m., and engaged in a verbal argument with her mother. So this is a pattern that's repeating itself, going to the biological mother's home, intoxicated, wee hours of the morning. The state does not need to show that the child has actually been harmed, but just that there is a risk of harm based on the father's behaviors. And given his history, I believe the state has shown that. In addition, Your Honor, the father's due process rights were not violated by the removal. There was no affidavit attached to the supplemental petition concerning him. It was the state's intent to present evidence at the initial protective custody in November of 2009, but based on the court's calendar, that matter was continued until early February of 2010. However, in between that period of time, the father was allowed to live with his son in the grandparents' home, the same situation that had occurred before the removal. I would also point out, in the interest of RG, which states that a delay of 14 days did not violate parents' due process rights in that case because visitation was permitted and allowing visitation protected against the risk of deprivation of an interest. Here,
didn't in that case the court say that the 14 days was at the outer limits of reasonableness?
Yes, but it was saying.
So here we're, depending upon when you start to count, you're 75 or 140 days.
Yes, but in that case, visitation was the saving grace. Here, the father and son were allowed to live together.
How does that make a difference?
He was allowed to parent his son, have daily, hourly, minute interaction with his son.
I thought his only contact was supervised visitation, even though he was residing in the same home.
They were still residing together. Technically, the contact between father and son was supposed to be supervised, meaning that his parents were to supervise contact that occurred between the father and son. However, they were allowed to live, cohabitate together, as they had done before this juvenile case had started. So if visitation...
So actually, taking the kid out to dinner wasn't that big a deal?
No, technically that was a violation of the safety plan that he had agreed to with the department. I think the bigger violation was becoming intoxicated and driving to his child's mother's.
But when that happened, the child was home and had been home for a long time.
Yes, that's correct. The paternal grandparents had to pick the child up from the Buffalo Wild Wings and take him back to the home. In addition, Your Honors, the juvenile court was correct in overruling the failure to state a claim motion, as well as the lack of subject matter jurisdiction. In re interest 7W states that even though the father in that case was not filed upon and the child was adjudicated under 247-3A, jurisdiction extended to the father. This is a similar kind of case. Jurisdiction has extended to him once his child was adjudicated pursuant to the mother's portion of the case. I think this is a father who's shown by his history that he is likely to engage in assaultive and aggressive behavior in the future, given his history of domestic violence and his relationship with the natural mother. And according to the case law, we don't have to wait around to see what will happen next if there is just a risk of harm to this child.
There apparently hasn't been any problem between mom and dad since the divorce, has there?
Well, there was the incidents of where he went to her home at 3 a.m. in December of 2009. She was not home. I believe that was evidence, but he engaged in an altercation with her mother. There wasn't any...
When you say altercation, it was a verbal...
Yes.
Okay.
That's all I... Mom
wasn't there. Mom wasn't there.
No.
Okay.
And the last time...
And the probation that's apparently a concern is an unsupervised probation from Iowa?
Well, the probation conditions, I believe there's testimony from the department worker that the father was not to drink alcohol or, and clearly he's in violation of his probation. I have evidence that he went to Buffalo Wild Wings.
I thought the only condition was that he not break any laws.
I believe the record stated that he was also not supposed to engage in the consumption of alcohol.
We'll check that. Back to the affidavit, if I understood your argument, it was that that wasn't really a problem because the state intended to present evidence that day?
The state did not include an affidavit to the supplemental petition concerning the father. It was, I believe, the state's intention to present evidence at the protective custody hearing to warrant a removal or to keep the child in the care and custody of the department. However, the judge ran out of time, continued the matter, and I don't believe that that's...
Isn't the affidavit a statutory requirement?
Yes. I would just point out, in In Re Interest of RG, that court stated, whatever may be the remedy for the state's failure to comply with the statutory requirements relating to the entry of an ex parte detention order, the failure does not deprive a court of jurisdiction. So I agree there should have been an affidavit attached or evidence presented at that detention hearing. I think even the court would acknowledge that the delay was untimely. It was simply a matter out of the state's control and up to the court's docket. If there are any questions?
Guess not. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Jacobs, any time left? Okay.
Just to clarify, Your Honors, from the record in Exhibit 14 is a copy of Mr. Long's probation, and drinking is not a restriction under that probation, only that he should not have any further law violations. The domestic violence incident from March of 2008 was a misdemeanor, and after that incident, Mr. Long and Mrs. Long did divorce. The incident at Buffalo Wild Wings where he took his son to watch a Husker football game, there was nothing in the record, no testimony that he was drinking while with his son, only that the drinking occurred afterward, and that, again, the contact after the son went with the grandparents was only with the maternal grandmother, and that with the mother and the child was not around. Again, I just want to emphasize that there has been no nexus, no connection between this father's criminal history, which dates back 10 years and almost 2 years, to the care of the child. And it's never been shown that there has been any impact on the child or that any of this prior to 2.5 years ago took place in the presence of the child. And those incidents, again, vague, and when the child was asleep. So, again, I would renew my request that the court remand this for dismissal and for return of the child to the father's care and custody. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. The case is submitted and you're excused. Thank you for coming.